Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Nir Ben-Zvi. I'm a program manager on the file server team. And I'm one of the program managers that worked on developing a feature set called Dynamic Access Control. Anybody heard of Dynamic Access Control? Okay, cool. So we just presented this in TechEd, but this has been here for a while. And this is a new way to do authorization and auditing on file servers in Windows Server 2012. I'm sure that you guys all know about the great SMB 3.0 features and so on. This is kind of like, what do we do after the data is actually on the file servers? So I deal with all the data management on the file servers, quotas, file screens, and so on. And the new feature set we developed for dynamic access control is really all about helping organizations be compliant, both business and regulatory compliance, on file servers. And the reason for us to do that is, you know, there's a lot of information on file servers and NAS devices, and organizations that we talked to came to us with a problem of how do we handle all this data? How do we make sure that we're compliant? You know, in Microsoft IT, we have a file server that contains all the global payroll information. On that file server, we had some regulatory compliance that we needed to adhere to, and some of them were related to access, who can access this data. Now, prior to Windows Server 2012, they had 96,000 different actors on this file server. So imagine when an auditor comes in and tells you, okay, who can access your data? You need to go and sift through all these 96,000 actors, which is an extremely hard thing to do, and figure out who can access the data. With Dynamic Access Control, they now have three rules that allow them to control who can access their data. And when an auditor comes in, they just show him, these are the rules of who can access my data, and they're able to then easily show whether they're in compliance or not. And we have many different examples such as this, and I'll try to kind of go through them as I talk through this presentation. But this is really about being able to control who can access my information, being able to audit who actually accessed my information, and also being able to further restrict access even if the information leaves the environment, the file sharing environment, through email or through other means. So if we look at the various concepts that are already talked about, you know, first and foremost, it's about identifying which information is important and which is not important. Because let's face it, 99% of the information is really not important for compliance and business regulatory requirements. Now, why is it important? Because really trying to protect all my information, to audit all my information, is just something that people cannot do, and they just give up. So it's really about, let's identify the information, and based on that, now we can apply the right access controls, the right audit controls, and the right encryption to the information. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay, cool. So let's start off with the data classification. So identifying the information. Who here knows about the file classification infrastructure? Okay, so I have a lot to teach you. Who here knows what a DLP solution is, data leakage prevention? Okay, so in order to be able to help organizations manage all their data and figure out what's happening with their data, there's it's not new, but there is a brand of products that's called data leakage prevention. That what they do is they scan the file shares, they classify the data based on content, and they look at the content and look at regular expressions, and they classify them as, this is credit card information, this is personal information, this is IP information, and so on. And then they report that these findings to the administrators, to the security administrators of the companies, so that they can figure out if the data is in the right place. So these are, this is like, I would say, a billion-dollar market today. It's growing pretty fast. It's still nascent because it's very hard to deploy them, but we are making it much easier as we move forward. So the file classification infrastructure, which was introduced in Windows Server 2008 R2, is all about being able to tag your data, find the right data, identify your sensitive data, and then apply retention or encryption based on that. In Windows Server 2012, we also allow to apply access and audit control based on that. So let's see how we can identify the data. This is a really hard problem to solve for organizations. And one of the things that we did off the bat is just say, we gave organizations a way to classify their data to, assign metadata to files, and they said that's great, but what do we assign, right? So, we worked with a customer, a big customer, and they said, yes, we'd like to use this, but how do we tag our data? And we told them, you should tag your data as based on your business requirements. So they went on a project that's a year long to figure out how to tag their data, and then somehow it fizzled away and they didn't do anything. So we figured out, okay, we should help them be able to tag their data. And we released something called the Data Classification Toolkit that takes a set of regulatory requirements and a set of logical business requirements and just says, here are the list of 13 properties that you need to use in your organization in order to tag your data. And you can use one of them, two of them, but we give you the list of these in your environment so that you can decide what you want to use. And we also gave them a list of a bunch of regular expressions that they can use to identify the data based on the content. So now that allowed them to quickly ramp up and use this in order to classify their data. So let me show you a little bit about the file classification infrastructure in Windows Server 2012. The first thing to note is that, you remember I talked about that list. So I'm going now to Active Directory. And when we talk about how we want to tag our data, we need somewhere to define how we want to tag our data. On R2, you can do it on a server-by-server basis. And in Windows Server 2012, we allow you to do it across your forest in your organization. So we have something called resource properties here. And we have a bunch of default properties that are coming in the box. All you need to do is enable them, and you can use them. By the way, feel free to ask questions in the middle. Or if it's not interesting for you, just relax. And I hope my voice is will make you sleep quick. OK, so we have here, for example, the department property. And you can see that it's defined as a single value choice, and it has a bunch of different options here of what the department can be. And we have another one that say, PII, which is a personally identifiable information. Again, same thing, but this one is disabled. It's not enabled. So here I enabled only the department, the impact, and the country. These are the three properties that are enabled here. And I'm going to be able to use them on my file server. Let's see how I can use them on my file server. So there's a few things that I can do here. I can now go to my file server. And of course, I can, the country one was a new one. We don't supply this out of the box. So you can easily define new properties that you want to assign metadata with. So if you are, is there anybody from NetApp here? OK, if you are from NetApp, you can now look up the list of properties in Active Directory and allow users to tag data based on these properties. And if you NetApp does have NTFS kind of like alternate data streams, right? So then any Windows 8 client would be able to tag data on a NetApp device without you needing to do anything. So you're already interoperable. Okay, so, and of course, NetApp is just an example. I'm sure that everybody else also has that. So let's see, you know, I'm on a Windows 8, on the file server, but I could also be on a client, and I'll go to my data repositories, and I'll go to my department shares here, and I want to say that the finance department, you know, classification. Can you see, Michiko, can you see it back there? It's too small. Can you guys see it? Okay. You know about it, so. So, you know, I can say department, and this, you see country, department, and impact. These guys I just received from Active Directory. Department equals finance, and basically I'm done. So this is now all files under this folder would be assigned department equals finance. Yes, question.
So where does that get stored actually on the server? In the alternate data stream?
Excellent question. So it gets stored in three different locations. One is in an alternate data stream so that when I move the file, it moves with it.
Well, depending on how you move the file.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. For Office documents, we also store it inside the Office document so that when I move the file even through email, it's still there.
And So where's the understanding of the internals of an Office document? Is that built into the client that's doing the set, or
it's built into the server? It's built into the server. It's an extensible model so that you know, and Adobe can also plug into that so that it supports PDF documents and so on. And the and we also store it in the security descriptor of the file so that we can use it for authorization and auditing.
Is there a documentation on exactly what
absolutely
fields in the security descriptor you're using?
Yeah. There is very detailed documentation.
Is
there into this?
The stuff you're talking about was this.
This is new.
This is new.
Great. This is new. Thank you.
Do you want to comment on the doc?
It's MSD type is the document. MSD type is the document that has the security descriptor explanation in it.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. No, it's stored in all three of them. Sorry? Yes. The question was, is it stored only in one location, only the secure descriptor, or only the alternate data stream? No, it's stored in all three locations that I talked about, the in-file, alternate data stream, and security descriptor, but there's only one authoritative source. So, for example, for security, it would only be the security descriptor. And we use the other ones when you move files around, we kind of use them to, because the data in the security descriptor does not move with the file, we use the alternate data stream to kind of promote back into the file as you move the file. Yes.
In the shared environment, the alternate data stream, is that also managed by the server? Or is that
it's all managed by the server.
So it creates a file that I inherit in the SD from the parent directory, also the parent stream?
No. The server would take that SD and promote it to the ADS.
Yeah, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, the question was, what happens if someone creates a file, say, in the finance directory, and then the file would inherit the department equals finance, but of course the alternate data stream is not inherited. So what the server does, it kind of kicks in a few seconds afterwards, and it sees the new security descriptor with the department equals finance and writes it up into the alternate data stream and into the file. Yes, question.
So when you say server?
File server.
The file server actually does this?
Yeah, the mechanism that does it is the file classification infrastructure that's part of the file server resource manager. It's a good question.
Is it supposed to be a hidden alternate data stream, or is it?
The question was, is it a visible or non-visible alternate data stream? It's completely visible. Okay, there is another mechanism on the file server that's kind of pluggable that allows you to automatically classify data based on the content. So here's an example of how it looks like. I'm going to the file server resource manager here. And I have classification rules. And the classification rule I have here is that if you find a regular expression that looks like a credit card, I'd like to classify the data as impact equals high. Let's see if I can make it bigger. No. Okay, as impact equals high. So the kind of like the regular expression is here. It's a kind of like a credit card. It's a very simplistic one. You can have much more elaborate ones that are more credit card kind of things, but then I couldn't write down a credit card that's 1111122 and so on. So we look into the content, and that's again, the file server resource manager does that. Or you can have a DLP solution, a data leakage prevention solution that looks over the content and marks the file as impact equals high or something like that. So just keep in mind that there is this way to classify the data as well. The initial way that I showed you was something that the business owner can do. You can just go to a folder and say, my folder is department equals finance, and that would just mark all the folder as such. Question?
Sorry, circle back around. This idea of the format of the alternate data stream and responsibilities of the file server, those documents, any way that people...
Yes. The format, the question was whether the format is documented, the responsibility of the file server is documented. The answer for both is yes. There is a...
MSFCIADS.
Yes. I'm not the expert on the...
MSFCIADS.
Right. Yeah. MSFSRM is the file server resource, file system resource manager.
Yeah.
That's a very, very large document that's been there for a long time. It was updated for this content quite some time ago, actually, in our first release of the Windows 8 doc. MS-FCIADS is the alternate data stream data structure format. That's a relatively small document, and that describes what Nir's talking about right now.
Thank you.
That talk.
And if you see anything missing, we'll document it as well. By the way, we'd be more than happy, like you guys can directly, of course, look at documentation, but you can directly talk to the product team. We'll be more than happy to help you with any questions or technical issues. Okay, so we identify the data, and now we can do some cool stuff with this. So let's go back to our presentation. And let's talk about this mess that we have today. So today, if I wanted to protect a folder that has, you know, 50 think about this folder structure. I have 50 countries, and below each country I have like 20 departments. How many security groups do I need to protect all these? That's correct, 1,000 security groups. That's simple math. And let's say I also added some sensitive information. Make it 2,000, right? So if a user moves from one, you know, country to another, I need to change a lot of groups. If he moves from one department to another, I also need to change a lot of groups. This is the situation today. It's unmanageable, and it's very, very hard for, this is where we got the 96,000 hackers in global payroll. How do we solve it? So the first thing that we kind of introduced, let me see if the next slide is the right one before I take you there. No, it's okay, so I'll stay on this one. So the first way to solve this is, the reason this is a problem today is that the conditions in the access control list are ORed. So you can say allow this group, or this group, or this group. And of course, that's a problem because then you need to have 2,000 groups represent this kind of tree structure. What if we could use ANDs? So the first thing that we did in Windows Server 2012 is the ability to use ANDs in access control. Let me quickly show you how this works. Let's go to my file server, and I'll quickly go through my countries. And I have here, say, US, finance, sensitive data. So I can simply go to the properties security, advanced, and I can add, allow access to all authenticated users. if user is member of US security group and user is member of finance department security group and user is member of sensitive information security group. And that's it. So now I can take all my 2,000 groups, and now I have one group for each country, one group for each department, one group for sensitive data, and I can kind of end them together so I can make all these combinations. And once I did that, I get down to 71 groups. And if somebody moves from one role to another, then of course I can just, change his group and that's it. I need to change one group. So this is really, really a big thing. You know, it's a small feature in Windows, but it's a big thing to be able to, you know, manage your groups. Now, we did that, but we still need to now apply 2,000 ACEs, right? Because I didn't save that. I just saved it to 71 groups, which is great. I still need to go and apply 2,000 ACLs because each folder has its own ACLs. But if I identify the data, I can potentially use that identification to apply security as well, right? So now we can take these 2,000 ACLs and change them to only 71 ACLs because I can say if the file is from US, then allow access to people from US. So I kind of take all these 2,000 ACLs and convert them to be 70 ACLs, right? So that's, we kind of took everything and simplified it using the ability to use these kind of conditions. Let me show you how this looks like because it's a bit more complex. So when we talked about authorization, we looked at, and also auditing, we looked at, okay, what's the next steps in the evolution of our 20 years old ACL model? And we not only thought about what do you do in your company, we also thought about, okay, how do we make it so that our authorization is flexible enough to support federation scenarios or cloud scenarios and so on. Doesn't mean that we support the specific one, the specific, you know, federation going out the door, but we'd like to have an authorization model that really carries us in the next at least 10 years. So if you think about it, here's how we kind of came to that authorization model. So first thing is about the user. So how do we identify the user today? We use security groups. We continue to use security groups, but we also added the dimension of claims. So you can say, you know, user department is finance, user country is US, and so on. These claims today are sourced from Active Directory. You know, in Windows Server 2012, our source from Active Directory into Kerberos. But there are also, how many folks here know what ADFS is? Okay, so ADFS, AD Federation Server Services. So I'm just going to comment that it is kind of compliant with how, our Federation services are working and leave it at that. So we represent the user. Then we can also represent the device the user is using. Does the device belong to the finance department? Is it a managed device, and so on? And last, we have the properties of the resource. What department is the file from? Which country, and so on? And then we can have an access control that says, allow access if the user department equals the file department, and the user country equals the file country. So we took these 2,000 ACLs and 2,000 groups and converted them to three claims and three access conditions. Right, so that's a pretty substantial way to kind of migrate from your current environment to the new environment. Now, I could use groups here, right? So if I didn't have claims, I just said groups, I could say, If file department equals finance, then allow users that are from the finance security group to access the file. So instead of one condition here, I would have you know, 20 conditions, but it's still something that I can kind of centralize. And let me point something very important for you. There is nothing here that says where the file is or where the information is. It just talks about what the file is and who the user is. So now I can apply it across all my file servers. I can write my policy in Active Directory and apply it across my organization so that if the file moves around, it's still protected by the same policy. That's a very, very powerful concept. If I took all this, you know, folder structure that you just saw and I turned it around on its head, this would still work. I don't need to change any security as long as the files are tagged correctly. If I move it around to another server, it still works. So this is a very powerful model to be able to apply policies that are central that allow you to control access based on what the file is and who the user is. Does that make sense? Okay. See, this is the comment from Tekkit, so disregard it. Okay, let me show you how this works. So now I'm in Active Directory, and I'll show you the central access policies that we have here. So I manage my central access policies in Active Directory, and I have here two central access rules. One is about department information. So there's a few things to note here. First, there is kind of what we call targeting. So we only care about information for this rule. We only care about information that is tagged as department, because we don't care about other information. You know, I don't care about cmd.exe. You know, this is none of my concern for my business, but I care about files that are tagged with the department information. So if the file has a department information, then allow access only if user.department equals resource.department. And I have also access that are allowed to administrators, system, and the owner of the file. I could choose not to allow it, so a lot of people don't want to allow administrators to access. You could just remove administrator from this list and they would not be able to access. Of course, they can also, the administrators eventually control the central access policy on their file servers, but they can't say now, I inadvertently browsed into this folder and did it. They need to remove the central access policy, which is an auditable event, and then go and access the data. So this is really, this would show intent. Okay, and I have another one here. Another rule that's completely different information. This rule is talking about all the information that where impact equals I. So if impact equals I, I'd like to make sure that only the administrators can access it, and I also have here a condition that I forgot to delete, but that the user company equals the resource company. But remember, I have these two rules that are talking about completely different information. And if the information has department, the department rule is going to fire. If the information has impact, the impact rule is going to fire. If the information has both department and impact, both rules are going to fire, and you need to pass through both these rules in order to access. So if you look at the access control, we check the local access on the file. If the user doesn't pass that, then it's thrown away. Of course, we first check the share access control. If he doesn't pass that, it's gone. Then we check the local access on the file. If he's not passing that, it's gone. Then we check the central access policy. If he's not passing that, it's gone. So it's like three gates that he needs to go through. Okay, so we have this central access policy. And now let me show you how we can assign it to the shares. So I'm going now to the file server. Let's cancel out of that. Clean this up. Okay. So department shares, I'm going to go here to properties, security, advanced everything we have to even advanced, and we have central policy here, and we can simply say, you know, assign the central policy, and you see these two rules that are were defined in AD now applied here. Now, we can also apply it across multiple servers. That there's a tool that kind of applies it across chairs, and this is new information in the security descriptor that basically points to that central access policy. Yes.
One policy per object, multiple rules per policy.
Yes, exactly. We kind of we have a grouping of you can group multiple rules into one policy, and only one policy can be applied to a folder, if you will. The question was one policy per you know per object and multiple rules per policy. Okay, so I assigned that, and we also tagged the data. And now we're ready to go to our client. So the client doesn't need to be Windows 8. Can be any client. Doesn't need to be Windows. Unless you're using device claims. For device claims, it has to be Windows 8. So this is the client. Let me show you who the client is. So I'm going to run something called UMI and look at the claims. So as you can see, you know, this is team is from the operations department. So department equals operation, company equals Fabricom, and you know this is his claims. Yes.
Sorry, I'm trying to set device claims and see them somewhere.
So the question was, how can we see device claims? Michiko, do you can you remind me how we can see device claims? Can we see device claims?
That's a Dave question. I mean, you can dump the token and see it, but I don't think UMI supports it.
So UMI does not support it, but you you basically can dump. You need to dump the device token, not the user token.
So the follow-up, I think I've set this up. I've seen, I've had user claims coming from Windows 8. But uh-huh. Looking at the token, I'm not seeing device claims. Is there something special we have to do to enable those?
Yes, it depends how you set up your policy. So, there's a few things here. First, I'd like to kind of explain to everyone that the new innovation here is that we take both the user claims and the device claims and we package them together into the user token. So now both the device groups and the device identity is packaged into the user token so that when the user gets to the server, it's called a compound identity. When the user gets to the server has both the user identity and the device identity to make authorization decisions based on that. Now, the question from this gentleman here was, okay, I can't see the device claims. Of course, if the device claims are only merged into the user token when we create the token for the server. So it's not in the, on the client itself, there's different tokens for the device and different for the user. It's only when we create a service token for the service, we kind of merge them together into one token. So, in order to get device claim on the server, there's a few things you can do. One is you just create a central policy that has device claims, and kind of like all the servers are lighting up accordingly and setting up the right bits. But if you don't have a policy on your server that has device claims in it, the server would not request device claims. So you need to go to the, there's a group policy settings that allows you to say, for this server, please ask for device claims. Okay? And if you send us an email, we'll get you the right group policy. I'm not sure it's in the current documentation, but or just create a central access policy with device claims and shoot it to the server, it would already, it would request device claims for you. Okay? And of course, you need to use a Windows 8 device, a client. Okay, so our client is going now to the department shares. And, you know, he can go into operations, do his work, because resource.department equals user.department. So we're all good here, right? It's operations. But if he decides that he wants to see, you know, his manager's salary and goes to finance, he'll get access denied. Now, another thing that we did here, this is not your ordinary access denied. We allow to get contextual access denied information. So if you look at this screen, basically what's happening is that the Client is going to the server through SMB, gets access denied. And then we have some logic on the client that calls the server remotely using RPC. It's using a WMI. And basically asks the server, I was trying to access this location. Give me some contextual information about it if you have it. And what the server returns back is a string that you see here. Ask your manager if you're the right security and so on. In Microsoft, for example, we have some access to folders that we just return a link that you should click on in order to go through a workflow. So all this is enabled in the Windows Server, and it's enabled through remote protocols. So you can also implement it on your end, and then the Windows Dev client will just get that information. And you can also ask for assistance, basically sending an email to the owner of the data so that he can help you get access. So this is done through WMI to the server from a Windows Ed client. Now, let's say I did send that email and it got back to the admin on the server side. So on the server side, we enabled another very cool feature called effective access. So if I go back here to security, I can now go to effective access and say, okay, let me see why Tim does not have access here. So if I look at the effective access, here I can see that Tim does not have access because of the department access rule on the server. And I can also go, the way we do that, again, this is all remote, so this is all through RPC. There's a remote API that we enable on the server. And now we can also say, what if Tim was part of the finance department? And see that if he was part of the finance department, then he would get access. Because sometimes there are like 20 rules, right? You don't know which one. You know which ones did not enable access, but you don't know what to do in order to enable access, right? It could be three different things. So with effective access, you can actually figure out what needs to be done in order to give team access.
What happens when you click on select device?
Let's see, I never tried it. This is an access for device, not device claims. So this is what device you're using. Whether you want to allow device to access this. Michiko, we didn't have device claims here? I'm surprised. It could be.
What the device?
Let's try.
What
did you do there? I don't know. Which device, client one. Okay. So you can say which device, but I don't know.
No, scroll down. Should be able to add.
I would be surprised here. Yeah.
Oh, for effective access. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were building an Apple.
It's a good question. I don't know. I need to check. But are we bringing we're bringing the claims for the device. That's pretty cool. I never did the demo with the device, so it's I never even saw it, right? Like, I'm so used to the user one. But yeah, if we select a device, we should also have device claims there. I'll check if maybe there is no device claims at all. That's why it's not showing up, because they're not defined. But anyhow, great question. You opened my eyes. Another thing to see here is that, we have everything is here, right? The share policy is here. The permissions of the file is here. The central policy is here, so that you don't need to go through different UIs to get to the same thing. One small thing I wanted to mention here. Usually, we only allow the administrators to see the share permissions. But in Windows 8, we allow all users that have full control to see the share permissions. Because otherwise, it would be very hard for users to troubleshoot this. And we don't want people to be administrators to troubleshoot access control. that's something to keep in mind. Okay, so we did central access policy. And just to quickly recap, you know, we can now define user claims, resource properties, and access policy in Active Directory. We did all this for you guys. So all you need to do is do the right authorization on the backend. And sounds like you already support alternate data streams and of course security descriptors. And you know, all this just works for you. So that's pretty cool. You know, you assign the central access policy to the data and you classify the information using whatever method I showed you, and then when the user accesses, the access is evaluated. Any questions? Okay, so the next thing, that's just to show you how this evolved. So, you know, we can go from no conditional expressions with the 2,000 groups, or in some cases, 20,000 groups and so on, to using ends in the conditions, where you can actually have central access policies with ends and security groups, and then last using claims, which is simplifies the access control as well, much more. Question? Nothing? Okay. Don't be shy, guys. This is your opportunity. I'm here.
Got a policy, security description. Policy is deleted. Still sitting there.
Yeah. Then only administrators would be able to access this area.
What was the question?
The question was, what happens if somebody, you know, in AD deletes the policy? We fall back to a secure state. So no one can access, and administrators need to go and change the policy. Yes. Yeah. Usually the deployment model is people would apply central access policy to a share. So it's and we have tools that can kind of go through the shares and see what access policy is defined where, so that you know you can see where this access policy is defined. Okay, the next one is about automatic encryption. So by the way, let me show you one more thing before we get to that. I'll show it to you with this. So think about today, when the data moves outside of the server, we protected it on the server, but if there's sensitive data that's potentially going to move outside of the server, you want to also go ahead and encrypt it in some way. Of course, for Microsoft, we use rights management encryption. Who knows what RMS is? Okay. Rights management allows you to encrypt the file so that you can use it for a specific thing only. So, you know, you can say, I'd like to use this file. I allow, Tom to use this file to view it, but I don't allow him to copy or print it. And I allow Michiko to have full control over this file. And nobody else can access this file because it's encrypted. Right? So the problem is that while there's some guidance on how to use this, people really don't use this because, you know, information workers don't really know what to encrypt to what and so on. It's very hard. But we can do it automatically on the servers. So for example, let me show you a team copying some sensitive information into the file server. So this file has credit card information in it. What's going to happen, you remember that automatic classification? It's going to automatically classify the file as impact equals high. And then once it's classified as impact equals high, we have another process on the file server that looks for all files that are impact equals high and automatically encrypts them. So while I was talking, this got encrypted. As you can see, the file size jumped from 14K to 145 or 146, which is a cool feature of encryption. And then you see when I try to open the file, it kind of communicates to some server because it's encrypted. Oh, come on. Seriously? Okay. And it didn't allow me to open it.
It works, it's secure.
I've done this demo like 100 times. This is the first time it didn't allow me to. It's good that it's with you guys because you're not going to buy my product, so. But I can guarantee you it works. Sometimes. Let me show you another cool thing, just since we're here and we're in a good mood.
So I guess the who's doing the decrypting here? Is that the server or the client?
It's the server. So
okay,
sorry.
It goes over the wire with your text.
No, I'm sorry. I missed. The server is providing me with a key to decrypt the data. So the server holds the keys, and then the client communicates with the server, gets the key, and decrypts the data. So just, you know, let's go and take some private information here from the file server and dump it into the public shares. So again, what happens is automatically we're going to analyze the content and assign impact equals high to that file.
Just to go back, the first file you copied would have been unencrypted across the wire, and then once it landed on the server,
yes,
it gets encrypted.
Yes.
Yeah,
the question was, when I copy the file initially, would it be unencrypted on the wire? The answer is yes. If it's unencrypted on the client, it's copied, it's on the wire, it's unencrypted. So now what I did on the server side, I also copied some private information to the folder, and it's marked as impact equals I. And let's see what the client can see. So if you go back to the client, you can see that the client, let me just refresh it so you believe me. The client cannot even see that information. The reason he can't see it because there is a central access policy that says for I impact data, only the owner can see, only the owner can access the file. And here I enabled something called access-based enumeration, which doesn't allow you to see a file that you don't have access to. So the idea is that we encrypt the data so that when it moves out of the server, it's still encrypted and protected. And as you see, it's very protected. Even I couldn't access it. Let's finish up with auditing. So auditing. When you ask people today if they're auditing access to files, most of the answers is no, because of the sheer amount of audits on accessing to files. How can we solve that? We can solve it now when we identify the data. We can just say, you know, audit that data, right? So I could say, audit all access if file.department equals finance, and don't audit other access. Or audit all access of non-finance department employees to finance information. So I can really now target my access, my audit, across all my organization. I can have an audit in AD that says, audit all access to my finance information, and basically that applies for all my servers, and I'm good to go. So that will really help organizations audit the access to data that they're interested in. And this is for compliance reasons, so they're able to produce audit of who accessed their finance information, for example. It's for forensic analysis. I'd like to know who accessed my high impact information. And also, potentially, in the future, for intrusion detection. Somebody is trying to access, you know, high impact information or IP information, let me go and see why he's trying to open 200 files in the last 5 minutes. So this is really good stuff. Now, it's not enough to audit it. You also need to be able to have some contextual information in the events so that when the audit is collected, you can have reports such as who accessed all my financial information the last 3 months. So when we audit these events now, we audit them in a way that, of course, as the user, as the file, and as the contextual information of how the file was tagged. So that you can see here that we say Alice tried to access a file where, you know, personally identifying information is high and department equals finance. So if I collect these events, use this metadata, I can now report on access to finance information across my organization. So this is a real Windows Server 2012 event. Any questions about this? Yes?
Can you protect the events with the same?
So the question was, can we protect the event through the same mechanisms? Right now, that mechanism is only used for file servers, but all the APIs are completely open. So we didn't even change NTFS. These are all low-level security APIs and the NTFS calls, and any line of business applications can use it. Now, the event viewer is not using that API yet, but it's something we can do potentially in the future. Okay. So just to summarize again, same picture. We define claims, audit policy, resource property in Active Directory. These go down to the server, and then when the user tries to access, either gets access denied or allowed, and based on that, there's auditing. And there are a few partners, as well as our own System Center Operation Manager, that collect these events and allow to report on them based on the contextual information. Okay. Since I have 5 minutes, there's one thing I didn't mention, and I'd like to mention before we conclude. When you think about central access policy, right, that's applied across, you know, say, 1,000 servers, someone would need to be crazy to change that policy, right? That policy is working. Let's say I deploy that policy, and it's working. How do I know what happens if I change it, right? So really, this would be something like a termination event for an IT if he goes and changes it. So we really wanted to make sure that we help administrators in this regard, in kind of managing the life cycle of a policy. And the way we did it is we allowed to propose a policy. So let's say I had the department policy, allow access only if user.department equals resource.department, and I also wanted to add and user.country equals resource.country. So instead of putting it in the current policy, I can propose a new policy that kind of travels with the exact same policy that's existing. And then what we do is we evaluate both policies. Of course, we allow access based on the current policy, user.department equals resource.department. But we also evaluate the other one where user department equals resource department and user country equals resource country. And if the answer is different, we log an event. So that now what you can do is you basically have two policies running and you can in production and you can see what will be the impact of the new policy when you deploy it. So you can run it in a what we call a staging mode, in a proposal mode for a month and see, I didn't get any event, so I'm good to go. Or, I got 10,000 events. I probably don't want to deploy that policy. Let me see what's wrong, and let me kind of adjust it, and then try again. This is a crucial part of that central access policy. Without that, no one would deploy. Maybe they would deploy the first one, but definitely not the second one. Question?
So the yes. Stage policy is not a different policy.
Yeah. The stage policy and existing policy are on the same object. Yes. Yeah.
Auditing policies versus access policies?
Auditing policy is using the mechanism that we have today. So the question was, where is the auditing policy? It's using the same mechanism of auditing that we have today. We just allowed the new ACEs. So it's in the SACL.
So conditional ACEs in the SACL.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not a central auditing policy.
There is actually a central auditing policy for the server. It's something we introduced in Windows Server 2008 R2. It's called Global Auditing Policy.
And it's not pointed to the same way.
No, it's a server-based audit policy, but it has the same effect as a policy on the SACL. It's just server-based. Yes, please.
Is there an audit for file and device claims?
So the user logon event, I'm sorry, you asked file and device events?
Files claim and device claim.
Yeah. So when we assign metadata to files, we audit that as well, yes. It's a change to the security, so we audit that. And for device claims, so user claims for sure they're in the user logon event. I don't know if we audit the device claims there. and we don't have the right person in the room to answer that.
I have a follow-up question.
Yes.
It's not obvious to me that where we can define file and device claims.
Where you can define them?
Yeah.
So we define them in Active Directory. So you saw that when I went, let me go to Active Directory for a second. It's a good question. You saw here I have a list of resource properties. This is where I define my country and impact and department and metadata definitions.
And those are user, right? Those are...
No, those are file. Those are file. And then here when I claim types, these are users and devices. So user and devices are defined here. See, this is, you remember we had the user department and the user company? So I can go and say, you know, new claim type. Okay. And I can define a new one and I can say whether, no, this is by default for both users and devices, but I can say this is only for users or only for devices and so on. So there are two places in Active Directory. In this place, in the claim types, you define the user claims and the device claims. Mm. And in resource properties, you define the metadata that can be assigned to the file. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Any other question? Yes, please.
Given that this data is saved in the ACLs,
yes.
What happens if you take an NTFS volume from Windows Server 12 to 0802 or something like that? What happens to the access to the file?
So, great question. For the 0802, it would be opaque to the 0802, and the access would be based on the ACLs. But all the conditional ACLs or conditional ACEs or central access policy would be just ignored. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yes. Another question.
Yeah. If you have a conditional ACE that like is looking at a resource value, and that's not available or it's not tagged, if department equals this in your conditional ACE, but your data is not tagged or the file is not tagged with that. How do you evaluate that conditional? Or if a claim's not pleasant or a device is not?
So let's say I have a file with the question was I have a file with no department, but there is an ACE that says, you know, resource of department equals finance, then we just evaluate it as being false. You can also say resource of department exists or don't exist. So, but if you say if it's equal finance and it's not on the file, then it's false. First of all, in central access policies, there are no deny ACEs. Although, if you can't pass the rule, you're denied access. And if a deny ACE locally on the file, I don't know the answer, but I assume it would be true. I need to check that. It's a good question.
The algorithm's actually documented in MSD type. So you can read the algorithm.
So do you remember if deny would...
I don't remember the answer, but I know the algorithm's there.
Yeah, okay.
You always try to fail the most secure.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it is deny.
I'm sure we failed secure. That's like...
Yeah.
Any other questions? Yes, please.
So far, you mentioned about user-related access only. Can you give some ideas about the device-related policies or claims?
Device-related policies, what do you mean by that? Give me an example of your question.
Like, how can I assign a device-related policies?
Okay. So, you know, we said user.department equals resource.department. Same way you can do device.department equals resource.department. So you just, I'll show you in Active Directory, let's say, let's go to our central access rule. Of course, I don't have device claims here, but I'll show you how it looks like. Or we can use device groups. So we could say, let's do edit. Let's just edit this guy. And we can say, you know, and device group. I don't have, again, I don't have claims, but if I had claims for devices, it would show here. But I can say device group is, you know, US country, US security group. So basically, I use the device identity in the rule, right? I said device needs to be part of the US security group and user department equals resource department. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
I think this question maybe is obvious to us, like who can access, but not obvious like when we're going to use device claim or when we're going to use file claim.
Ah, that's based on the business requirements, right? Let's say, for example, that for some sensitive information, you only allow managed devices to access the data, like only devices from corporate to access data, okay? Let's say for all information that is IP related, you'd like to make sure that only managed devices access the data because only managed devices are also BitLocker encrypted. So you can say, you know, you can have a claim that says, you know, whether the device is managed or not, and you can say device.manage equals yes, and resource, you know, if resource.ip equals yes, then only device.manage equals yes allow access. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
So if you are a user and you're not using a managed device, although you have access to that IP information, you still cannot get it to your device because the device is not approved.
Okay. So is a security policy need to be a combination of all these three claim types?
It doesn't need to be a combination. Yeah, it can be one or more of them, yeah. Or you can just use security groups as well. You saw that in the first example that I gave, I said, you know, user group equals, you know, is either US. So user group is US and is part of the US group and is part of the finance group and is part of the sensitive information group, right? I didn't use any claims. I didn't use any device claims. I didn't use resource information. I just used groups, but I ended them together so that I can achieve the result that I wanted. So, as I said at the beginning, you know, if you guys need help on these topics, definitely reach out to us. We'd be more than happy to help you. I hope this was something new for you. So, most of you guys were not familiar with the subject. So, it's great that I had the time to kind of give you some of that knowledge. And I hope that you'll be able to implement it on your devices. That would be awesome.
One other thing I did want to say quickly is we have Ganga here. The presentation at our previous PlugFest covered MSAZOD, which was just released this last week in the preview node, and all of you have that in your preparation items, the email. So on the preview node on MSDN, that is available. Ganga's presentation is also available recorded on Channel 9 for the PlugFest. So be aware that the protocols that are referred to behind the scenes are covered in that document for the authorization scenarios. So hopefully that'll be helpful to you as well. I did also want to mention that we have a number of folks I mentioned briefly earlier. From Michiko is here from the security side. If you have other questions that relate, Neil, by the way, who mentioned D-Type is the architect for that specification. We have our test team. We will test some of those D-type access scenarios later this week. We also have, I know SW is here from the file services PM team. And Stephen, the writer for this document, Ganga is here also from AZOD. Do take advantage of these resources. I realize there's a lot of pieces to this scenario that Nir described. So thank you, Nir.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.